Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galati. Still with us, Sean Gold from Sean's Take, filling in for us for a couple weeks here. Great to have you back, Sean.
Well, thanks for having me back. I love doing it. I love filling in for you guys. And of course, Jim, I love talking March Madness. I mean, it's not a hard ask to get me to come back and talk some more about this.
I don't have to poke you too much to get you to give an opinion on March Madness. Well, we were starting to chat just a bit prior to the show, and I think we both agree. It's been a great tournament. It really has been.
I think it definitely has been. And look, there's in everything great, there's a media narrative that it's not great, right? That's just what the media does. You can have the best game and they'll make it that it was the worst game ever. So I see headlines that this tournament's it's not March Madness anymore. NIL area, this, that are all ruining it. I'm watching with my eyes and I'm very entertained with what I've seen so far, Jim.
Exactly. And I'll tell you what, I'm really glad you brought that up because I have certain things that just, you know, grind my gears, okay? And one of those is when the media, they write their articles before the tournament even started, all right? Somebody already had it in their head. Oh, gee, with the transfer portal, what's NIL, the tournament is going to be ruined. And they wrote their headline prior to the tournament starting. Now, a weekend into it, the first two rounds were through. They put that article out and they use, you know, the old saying, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics. They use their statistics to prove their point, and I think they're just wrong.
I completely agree with that. And I'm confused on what people, you know, who say the tournament is ruined aren't liking. Texas, an 11 seed in the Sweet 16. Iowa pulling off a massive upset against Florida. Like, I get it's not, you know, Penn isn't in the Sweet 16 right now. But how often does that actually happen where you have your, you know, out of nowhere school? Like, there are runs that happen, and in the coming years, there will be runs from a 13 seed, a 14 seed, who end up in the Elite Eight out of nowhere. Like, that's not going to go away. But this tournament hasn't been all favorites. I know on day two, every favorite won. And I think it was the second time in March Madness history that's ever happened. So in my opinion, that is more March Madness than anything, that we have something that hasn't happened in all but one historical March Madness tournaments happened this year. So just because it was the favorites winning, that actually went against the grain on what's supposed to happen. And then the next round, we got our upsets, and it got back to the chaos. So I think overall, it's been a hectic, chaotic tournament.
If you say Cinderella doesn't exist, High Point says, hold my beer. Okay, let me ask you this, and maybe you looked it up in the last couple days. Had you ever heard of High Point prior to the tournament, and do you know where High Point is?
I did look it up on where it was, but I don't remember off the top of my head where it is, actually.
You know, I would like to lecture you on that about your short-term memory, except for one little fact. I did the exact same thing. I looked it up, and I don't remember. I think it was like in Wisconsin, maybe. I don't know. I shouldn't have even said that because I didn't remember. But High Point did, they had the 12-5 upset. And do you know, sir, what is the best thing about that upset?
I don't. I'm trying to think on what angle we could go with this.
You should know, okay? In fact, you do know this fact. I picked High Point to beat Wisconsin.
There we go.
That is why it was so good. And I had multiple people ask me about how I picked them, why I picked them, what I knew about them. My answer is it was more about Wisconsin than it was about High Point because I didn't know anything about them. All I knew is we typically get a 12 beating a 5, and that was my best candidate for it.
That's 100%. And what's funny is my original bracket, I had High Point, and then morning of, I see all these metrics about the Big Ten is so good in the first round of March Madness. So I'm like, you know what? Let me switch TCU and Ohio State. I'll give Ohio State a win, and let me switch Wisconsin. And neither of them panned out very well. So I've been a little bit against the Big Ten, despite the fact that they are still doing very well in March Madness. And I believe have 6 teams alive in the Sweet 16, which is a crazy number to still have.
They have done very, very well. I'll tell you what, I want to get into some of the games and some of the games that we like, and then preview what's coming. But since we started to talk about it, that this criticism of the tournament, because the transfer portal has killed Cinderella. That's the, the narrative. And let me start with this, and someone making their point of that being the case brought up this issue. How many of the Sweet 16 teams, how many teams have their starting five are all from their school? Meaning, like you take a look at Duke, okay? Out of their starting five, how many of them started their career at Duke? And same thing for all 16 teams. How many teams are there where all five starters started at that school?
Let's see. My first answer went to zero, but that seems a little extreme. So I'll say maybe 3 out of 16 have five starters original from that school.
The answer, my friend, is 1.
So I was closer with my first thought.
Yes, you were on the idea with zero. Now the question becomes, okay, which team is it while we're going down this path? Care to guess?
Let's say Iowa.
It's actually Michigan State.
Okay.
And if you think about it, it's Tom Izzo, who, a cranky old man who doesn't like this modern transfer portal and blah, 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 and so on and so forth. So probably thinking in that way. And the people who cite that statistic do it as that's what's wrong with the game. But I was really surprised if you look a little bit deeper. There are multiple teams. There are 4 teams where 4 out of 5 starters started at that school. There are also 6 teams that have 3 of their starters started at that school. So if you add that up, that's 11 out of the 16 teams have the majority of their starters began at that school. And there's actually 2 teams, Michigan and St. John's, where the 5 starters came from 5 different schools. Okay, one of them could have been that school itself. But so where people want to use this as an argument, use this statistic to support their argument that everything is wrong, I don't think it holds water, Sean.
I don't either. And to be honest, Michigan having 5 starters from 5 different schools to me is more impressive that they're here, because the chemistry building in that is not easy. Like putting 5 guys who have never played together on a court to be a number one seed, like that's not easy. So I think that's overlooked. And I would also like to point out the fact, do we think Texas wouldn't be here as an 11 seed? I don't know the full breakdown of their roster and where everyone came, but they're not the team with all 5 starters. So do we think that the transfer portal and NIL didn't help them become an 11 seed that's now in the Sweet 16? So, the narrative can be pushed that it's bad for it, but it also gives other schools an opportunity that they've never had. And you can go, but before, when you used to get penalized for transferring schools and you'd have to sit out and everything, you could be that 6th man at Duke or the 6th man at UConn, who wasn't getting the minutes that they felt like they deserved, and then go transfer to a more mid-level program. And all of a sudden you're the star on that team. You show you deserve to be there. And now you're helping make a Cinderella run in the March Madness tournament. So I think it opens up more competition than anything, than closing it down.
And I also find it fascinating that we'll look at Texas as a Cinderella team. Right. And it's Texas, okay? And ironically, Cinderella, Texas beat Big Bad Gonzaga, okay? Right. Gonzaga is no longer Cinderella. Gonzaga is now they are Goliath.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we have to remember, too, Texas was one of the first four games. Like, Texas wasn't even supposed to be in the March Madness tournament, if we're going to look at it at that angle. So it only makes their, you know, run as a big school, but as an 11 seed, even more impressive.
Yes. So I'm looking at it, and you already brought up the point about not just Texas, but we also have Iowa, who was a number nine seed, beating a number one team in Florida. So, and if you watch these games, there's also, like I mentioned, High Point earlier, they won in the first round, and they gave Arkansas all they could handle in the second round. So this fear that Cinderella has gone away, I think it's a narrative that just does not carry any weight at all.
I completely agree. And look, we were also 6 points away from Siena beating Duke. And that would have, tell me there's not March Madness if Siena wins that game, right?
Exactly. And I'm sure on this show at some point I've talked about it. My college roommate, who was obviously a Penn Stater like myself, he got his graduate degree, though, from Duke. Mm. Okay. So come basketball season, he's very much a Duke fan. And at halftime, Duke was down. And in fact, Siena at one point had a 13-point lead on the number one overall seed, not just on the number one line, but the number one seed total overall was Duke. And they were down 13 points to Siena. Now, if Siena had won that game, huge upset, monster headlines. But the fact that they were even ahead like that, Sean, gave us an entertaining game.
It definitely did. It gave us an entertaining game. It gave you the March Madness scare in the first round. And, I mean, we already look at it. We're one seed down already. So we're not going to have a Final Four that's all one seeds, which I want to say that might have happened last year. We had 4 1 seeds, and that was also like the first or second time in March Madness history that it happened. So I think it just encompasses this narrative that March Madness is ruined needs to be thrown out the door.
No. And in fact, I would argue this is one of the more entertaining ones that I can recall in a while. We are going to go over some of those games when we come back right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B, empowered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold. It's quarter number two of our show. Sean is sitting in for Dustin Schutte this week. Got to give a shout out to Dustin. His Purdue Boilermakers, they advanced, so he's a happy camper. And even better, Dustin lives in St. Louis, and Purdue played in St. Louis. So he did not even have to travel from home to watch his Boilermakers.
Can't get much better than that, and Purdue looks pretty good. I'm sure we're going to talk about them a bit more here soon, but they've looked the part so far.
They really have. Before we get back into that, just a programming note, I want to mention, many of you are listening to this on Wednesday. Tonight, Wednesday night, or if you're listening, get it early on Tuesday, tomorrow night on Wednesday, March 25th, We are going to be at Pine Grove Hall in Pine Grove. There you go. Well, you'd expect that. That's Wednesday at 6 p.m. Myself, Mike Villagrana, Executive Director of Penn State's Collective, Happy Valley United, Chris Buchanani, who I know you all know. The three of us will be there along with several Penn State football players. So if you haven't been to Pine Grove Hall in a while, please check it out. Fantastic venue. We'll be there. We're going to be doing interviews with the players that are going to be there. You're going to get a chance to mingle with them, talk to them, maybe get a picture with them, all that kind of stuff. Really fun stuff. And you'll get to meet some of the new players that have come in. We know some of these guys, the names aren't familiar to you because of the transferring in. You'll get to know them. I think you'll get to like them also. So that is Wednesday night, Pine Grove Hall at 6 p.m. All right, Sean, we were talking about how it's still Cinderella still exists in the tournament, March Madness. The other thing I want to mention, like we talked about Siena giving Duke a battle, Duke eventually winning. One of the other things that is the nature of the tournament is we love the upsets in the first round. Absolutely love them. We all root for them. But once we get to Sweet 16, we want the blue bloods there, don't we?
It's 100% true, and it's funny you say that. And I guess a little backstory on this too. So I'm in a survivor pool in March Madness. So I had 25 entries. And day one, day two, you had to pick two winners, move on. Day three, it's one pick the rest of the way. But if you use a team once, you can't use them again. So, you know, I had Florida in four of my entries. I had nine remaining on, you know, the other day and had Florida in four of them. So that got cut down real quick. And it's like, if I didn't have that, I would love rooting for an upset. But then you get into it and you think, no, there's no way they're going to lose this game. And they're the favorite for a reason. And then it happens. So I think that kind of goes back to quarter number one where, look, there's still plenty of madness because what everyone thought was going to happen in that game did not indeed end up happening. But you're right. People want to see Duke advance. People want to see Purdue, Arizona, UConn end up in the final stages here. And it's like, well, you want all these upsets until it gets to the point where, wait, but these big teams that I grew up watching that I've always seen in March Madness might not be here anymore. I don't want to watch, you know, High Point in the Elite Eight anymore. Well, then why do you want them to win at all?
Well, the problem is we love High Point winning, but we're afraid that later on it's going to be, there'll be a sacrificial lamb for somebody. Yeah. So it's like Iowa beat Florida. Wouldn't we rather see Florida playing Nebraska rather than Iowa? Now, I'm not saying Iowa doesn't have a chance against Nebraska because I think they really do. But that's the kind of example. You don't want, High Point playing Michigan at this stage. We'll get into it a little bit, but you made reference to your survivor pools. Now, we're going to be talking about some of the games that occurred already and talk about going forward. Now, I'm man enough to admit this, Sean, and I hope you are also. My pool, my bracket that I filled out, it taints my point of view, my perspective, okay? I am biased based on my bracket. I hope that you can admit the same thing, and maybe we should both just give, like, who are our final four and who do we have winning it all?
Yes, so in my final four, I had Arizona, I have UConn, and then I had Houston and Michigan. So I still have potential for a Final Four to happen. I will say I'm not convinced UConn's going to get there at this point. Arizona is who I had winning it all. So that I still am very confident in. I would not change that for anything. I like Arizona this year. I think they're still the best team in the tournament.
Okay, you and I have a very similar Final Four, and I think maybe we influence each other. I have similar Final Four. I have Arizona, Michigan, same as you. I have Houston, same as you. I have Duke instead of UConn. I think we were both pleased with Florida losing. Mm-hmm. I actually had Florida losing in the next round in the Sweet 16. I had them losing to Nebraska. Okay. So I'm pretty happy. In fact, I was doing, you know, a happy dance when Florida lost. Okay. So they are the one number one seed I don't have making it to the final. So it's not necessarily a really bold bracket that I have with three out of four number ones and the number two, Houston. Now, we discussed this in previous shows. I was thinking I was going to go with Houston, but boy, I just really like the talent on Arizona's team. So I have an Arizona-Houston final, and I also have Arizona winning. So I bring that up so people understand our bias when we talk about these games. So let's take a look, though, at the first weekend. And again, some people have been critical of this. Let's look at your favorite games from the first two rounds. Or let's start with the first round. We already talked a little bit about High Point beating Wisconsin, a 12 beating 5. And, you know, the last note on that game was the game-winning layup by the High Point player was literally the first two-point basket that player has made all season, Sean.
Absolutely incredible. And I mean, Twitter was going crazy over that. They're like, this guy's only ever shot threes. I think he was 0 for 5 from two-point range the entire season, and then has the biggest two-point basket that he will ever hit in his life to seal a game for his team. There was what a story. And that right there is like, that's what you want March Madness to be, I think.
You really do. And it is fascinating. Obviously, he's a three-point specialist. And I love the quote, he was asked about it being his first two-pointer, and his response was something to the effect of, well, when it was happening, I wasn't thinking about whether it's a three-pointer or a two-pointer, and he had a breakaway with the layup, so he was ahead of the pack, so he's not going to pull up at the three-point line and shoot a three.
Yep, 100%. To get a little bit more to your question on, you know, one of my favorite games, I think, is an unpopular one, but Alabama-Hofstra, and for this reason, it was 90-70. It wasn't like a great March Madness game, and I'm not an Alabama fan. Like, I have no loyalty alliance to Alabama, but I like the way that they play, and I think we talked about this last week. You know, I have them losing to Michigan. I think, you know, they're right where I thought they would be, and I just think Michigan's a different beast, but a lot of people picked Hofstra as like a popular upset pick. And, you know, we're like, Alabama's not that team. And my analysis was Alabama, they love to run and they love to score. And I think if you can't match that pace, which Hofstra was a slower playing team, you have to be Michigan good to be able to slow a game down against a team like Alabama. So I was very satisfied with the fact that Alabama put up 90 and got a 20-point win. When I had a bunch of people text me like, oh, I wouldn't take Alabama there. I think you're going to be wrong about that one. So that was more of like a satisfactory win for me to see Alabama do what they did all season long and just put up points, go play, go shoot, and run up the score.
Well, I'm going to give you, and we could trade back and forth on some games here. I'm going to take one of, well, I guess it's pretty obvious, a great finish to it, which is what you look for in this game. Kentucky, Santa Clara. And you hear the Kentucky name and you think, my goodness, this is a potential Cinderella type of game. It was actually just a 7 seed versus a 10 seed. Mm-hmm. However, the end of the game, it's tied up, tie game. Santa Clara has possession. They put up a shot. They get an open three. They make the three. There are now 2.4 seconds left, okay? Not 5, not 10, 2.4 seconds left. At this point, you're thinking, it's over. You know they thought it was over. And nobody called timeout. It's not the NBA where you call timeout, you get to take it out in the front court. They have to go the length of the court. They do. The player just beyond the half court line throws up a prayer, banks it in, ties the game, and it's like you just knew at that point Kentucky would win in overtime. That's just the way it was going to work. I wish I would have gone online and quickly bet, because I was sure at that point Kentucky was going to win, and they did. But it reminds you of that end of game strategy. Do you call a timeout? Or how about you're up three? How about fouling?
That's what, there's been a couple other instances in this too, where like, especially in college, and even if you got the lucky, I'm in the shooting motion three quarters down the court, a lot of these college guys are not going to go 3 for 3 on the free throw line. So there was a lot of unprepared, and you'll see Hofstra's coach after the game said, I was calling timeout. It's like, you were nowhere near a ref. Did he technically, when you break it down, make a timeout signal before the ball was inbound? Sure. And he wanted to set up his defense, but you got to know situational awareness. If you wanted a timeout after your bucket, because in college you can call it after you score as well, which is different than the NBA also, you should be right in the ref's face, timeout, right away. Not, oh, they made it, I'm going to think about it. Oh, as he's getting ready to throw the ball, I'm going to run and call time. It's like, it doesn't work like that. So there was a little bit of a pity party from Hofstra's coach on this one that I was not particularly liking.
All right, Sean, that is it for quarter number two. We're going to continue our conversation about the games that have already taken place. There were a lot more great ones to review. And then we'll take a look at the upcoming games and get some picks from Sean.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three of our show. He's Sean Gold. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking March Madness, and it's been a great tournament so far. And we're talking about some of the games that went on. And you were mentioning in the Kentucky-Santa Clara game, the Santa Clara coach was saying he was looking to call a timeout there late in the game. He was late getting to it. But it brings up one of the things in sports that I think bothers me the most is the preparedness for these moments. And, you know, to use the analogy in baseball, it's before every play, every player should think, what do I do if the ball comes to me? Okay. If you're an outfielder with men on first and second, there's one of two things. Either a base hit comes to you or a fly ball comes to you. It's not like 100 different things. Know what you're going to do before the play happens. End of game situation like that, your team has possession of the ball. You know, either your team's going to miss and the other team gets the ball, or you're going to make a basket. If you make the basket as a coach, you've got to know. You've got to be able to anticipate, hey, I'm going to be looking to call a timeout. So instead of getting excited about the shot, you should be the calm, cool, collected one who, before the ball even goes in the hoop, you're looking for the official because you know you want to call the timeout.
I completely agree. And I mean, we see it all the time in college football too, with field position. Like, why would you not take a timeout here? It applies to basketball just as much. And I think people don't realize that because football just has more stoppage and I guess more opportunity for you to like think about this as you have a 30-second play clock that, you know, buys you some time. In basketball, it's faster moving. But like you said, you have to know that. And also there's other assistant coaches there as well who are more, you know, I'm thinking about the bigger picture strategy here. Like, that's my role. Not one person was like, hey, be prepared to call timeout if we go up right now. And that does boggle my mind that you can get this far and get caught up in the moment and still not be prepared.
And also, where is your chart that in football, there's, okay, when should you go for a two-point conversion after a touchdown? It should be the same way here. Depending on the score, am I going to call a timeout at the end of game? Am I, if I'm down two or up two or up three, when do I commit a foul? You should know that ahead of time. So when it comes in, there's no question, there's no discussion. You already know. But in that first round, by the way, just a couple other quick notes from the first round, then we'll talk about the second round. We had, TCU beating Ohio State with a basket with 4 seconds left. We mentioned the Kentucky-Santa Clara game. Another one we had was VCU beating North Carolina after being down 19 points in the second half, Sean.
And how about that one? And VCU was like a pretty popular, you know, upset pick for people in the first round. And it looked pretty dead, you know, for the vast majority of the game. And then to make that comeback, that was a very special comeback as well. And I think, I mean, it was a historic comeback. Like the metrics on that is one of the biggest. I forget if it's the biggest or not, but one of the biggest in tournament history there. So more history coming in from an underdog in March Madness, just another thing that you absolutely love to see. And that was also a game when they got it to overtime. You're like, there's no way they can go lose this. And they almost did. Like it wasn't an easy overtime. Kentucky handled overtime, I think, a little bit better. But you just felt like you got to complete the picture right here. You did all this work. You got to finish it off.
And if you're North Carolina, well, you expect more. Their coach may be looking for a new job. The other, just a quick aside, St. Louis was such a fun team to watch. Very different. They're big guy. If he wasn't 6'10 or whatever he was and a big, he would not be on the basketball court. Yeah. He looks the furthest thing from an athlete. But let's take a look at some of these second round games. There were some things very interesting. Let's talk about the big one. Iowa, a number 9 seed, taking down number 1 seed Florida. And again, big basket, a 3-pointer with 4 seconds in the game left.
You know, what was interesting about this game is Iowa had commanding control for a while. And then Florida starts to mount their comeback. And to me, watching the game, I kind of had the feel like how I had the feeling with Duke. You knew that Duke was going to, when they started to come back, they were going to win the game against Siena. I got that same exact feeling watching Florida. Like, we know they're a better team. We know, I mean, national champions last year, a lot of people picked them to repeat. They're going to complete it. Like, they're just a better team. It's going to happen. And then you give up just a wide open three down the stretch. I don't know what defensive breakdown that was, but that baffled me to see them complete the comeback like that and just give up like 10 feet of space to a shooter in the corner. And then that wasn't even the worst part. Their possession after that with 4 seconds left to not even get a shot off. Like, you're the number one team in your bracket. You've got to have a better plan at the end of the game. Offensive and defensive breakdowns lost Florida that game. And it's very surprising to see a team that good fall so hard in those situations.
Exactly. And you brought up one of the things that it boggles my mind in college basketball. I realize the double teaming that goes on. But so many teams that I watch play, it's they don't rotate fast enough. They don't compensate. If your opponent is at all good at recognizing the double team coming, it leaves people wide open for a shot. At that stage of the game, boy, you just cannot have someone left wide open. You just can't. And they did.
Absolutely not. And especially you're up by two. So at worst, let them drive, right? Like don't give up an open three that's going to cost you the game. Like if I'm Florida and I'm thinking, you give me overtime against Iowa, we're going to win this game. We're a better team. We'll calm the nerves and we'll go out and we'll beat them for whatever it is, the 5 minutes of overtime. Like that was the absolute worst case scenario that they could have given them. And they just, like you said, they're doubling when you're against the clock already. Don't double to give an open shooter a lane. Like the guy's good enough to find him.
You brought up a great point. You got to think, if you're Florida, the only way you lose this game is in regulation and giving up a three. And that's exactly what they gave up. One of the games of the tournament, Nebraska beat Vanderbilt by two. And I've liked Nebraska. I've seen them play during the season. I like their style of play. And I told you, I had them beating Florida on you know, would be the next round. And they ended up with a very close game with Vanderbilt. Nebraska, what I like about Nebraska is their ability to move the ball. They are a true team. Yep. They're not one of these, okay, how are we going to set up for our last basket? We'll isolate, get our best player one-on-one, maybe free up the whole side of the court. No, instead, they moved the ball, and it was off an excellent pass that it created the open lane, the layup for the shot. Vanderbilt answers. They had 2.2 seconds left when Nebraska scored. They get the ball inbounds, put up the prayer. It was off the backboard, Sean, around the rim. Sean, it did everything but go through the hoop.
It did. And that, I mean, I think that's the moment of the tournament so far, and it's hard to top it. I guess the way it can be topped is if a team makes that shot, you know, eventually in the tournament here. But yeah, that was, I mean, the swing of emotions in that. I think every Nebraska player on the court thought that was in it. And it's funny because you watch the Nebraska, they didn't even celebrate after. I think they were just like,
we
won this game. Like, what do we do now? What do we do? That was supposed to be the shot that sent us home. So that, I mean, that was such a great moment. And I think it sets up for, you know, now with Iowa winning, a very exciting Big Ten matchup here that we're going to get as well. So I like, you know, the narrative that it allowed for the Sweet 16 here. But I mean, what a heartbreak on one side and triumph on the other. And that's the hardest thing with these is, you know, as an unbiased, like I didn't have a dog in the fight. I didn't care if Nebraska or Vanderbilt won. Who do you root for in that situation? You feel for both teams. You're happy for both. You're sad for both. And it gets all the emotions as a fan in there.
Well, because I had Nebraska advancing in my bracket, I was lower key, but I was the same as the Nebraska players. After they make the shot, I'm like, yes, no, you know, and it's the ball rattles through the rim and comes out. You're right. To me, that picture of the Nebraska players who went from, you know, celebrating to, oh my goodness, no, this can't be happening. And it reminds me, I am, full disclosure, I am 66 years old, okay? I'm 66. Almost 60 years ago, I was in high school playing basketball, and we went from my junior year, a 2-win team. We were 2-20 to the following year making the state playoffs, okay? And our coach, I remember these words, says, guys, you will remember these games for the rest of your life. And Sean, I could tell you exactly what happened in those playoff games. Mm-hmm. I'm 66 years old. I could tell you what happened when I was 17. I could tell you we were down 20 points in the fourth quarter and we won. Okay. I can still tell you that. I could tell you the emotion then of losing, you know, when the next round. Can you imagine? That's high school. Could you imagine these guys, March Madness, whether you're a Vanderbilt player or a Nebraska player, you are going to be talking about that game for the rest of your life.
100%. And, you know, win or lose, I think that encompasses the beauty of what March Madness is even on a losing end of some of these shots, you remember it forever. And you're telling your kids and your... Yes. I was on that court when I thought that we were going to advance to the Sweet 16, and instead this happened. And it's these plays that, you know, as March Madness starts every year, they give highlights of years past. Like, that's a play we are going to be watching years to come when they get the March Madness hype train ready for the start of the tournament.
Oh, exactly. And they were the games, like you said, they are the moments. And when we talk about the quality of this tournament, it's those moments that make it so special. And we've already had so many of those. What we're going to do, though, next segment, Sean, we're going to look forward, and we're going to ask you who you like to win and what magic moments you think we're going to see when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Sean. I'm Jim. We're talking March Madness today. Just one more quick note. Wednesday night, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, it's tonight, Pine Grove Hall, 6 o'clock. Myself, Mike Villagrana, Chris Buccanani, we're all going to be there with several current Penn State football players, and you're going to get a chance to talk to them, mingle with them, get pictures taken. We are going to interview them. We're going to be on the stage interviewing them. It'll be a lot of fun, a very entertaining Pine Grove Hall, great place for this type of event. We really hope to see you out there. All right, Sean, we've been talking March Madness. Now it's time to look forward. We've got Sweet 16 games. This is when they are pretty much all really good matchups. Is there a game you're looking at saying, man, I can't wait for that one?
There definitely is, Jim. And it's Duke and St. John's.
Yes.
This is the one. I mean, it's historic. It's nostalgic. You've got legendary coaches in this. And I have Duke ending their tournament run here. So
wow.
I'm very eager to see this. I've been against the grain on Duke, you know, since the brackets came out, and St. John's is a team that I think is incredibly dangerous, and it's a team that I think has the potential to pull off our second upset over a number one seed in this tournament, Jim.
I also was pointing at that game because St. John's, by the way, do you know how long Rick Pitino's been coaching?
A long time. That's all I know.
Yes. Yeah, I think he was started coaching. I told a story about when I was in high school. I think that's when he started coaching, his coaching career. Somebody sent me a quote from about him where he was talking about one of his players being the most coachable player he's ever had since Billy Donovan. Billy Donovan is now 60 years old. Okay. So that tells you about his longevity. But what I think gives St. John's an opportunity in this game is the way they play defense. Mm-hmm. If you saw that game against Kansas, there were times Kansas could not even inbound the ball.
Yep.
And if you have, you know, that kind of team, that's going to give you a fighting chance against anybody, Sean.
Most definitely. And I think that's, you know, that's part of the reason why I think both of us have liked Houston to make it to the final. Like, when you have an elite defense like that, you can really disrupt a team. And I think St. John's has the potential to do that to Duke. I think Duke has shown when they're on, they might be the best team in the country. And Duke can beat anybody in the country. But if you can disrupt them a little bit, they're beatable. We saw that, you know, North Carolina pulling off the upset in the regular season. We saw even, you know, what Siena gave them trouble with. And so I think St. John's is a team that's good enough defensively and just matches them talent level wise pretty well. And I think that's a game that's just going to be so much fun to watch and uber competitive.
It really is. And as you look around, I think Duke, that's a tough road for them. Even if they do get past St. John's, it's either number two seed UConn or number three seed Michigan State, who that's another one of those matchups. It's, you know, Hurley versus Izzo among the coaches. They're teams that you expect to be there. 1.5 point spread in that game, that's one you just assume is going to go down to the wire.
I completely agree. And, you know, even right now I'm trying to think of who I think wins that game. And I know I have UConn going to the Final Four in my bracket, but, man, I would not be shocked if Michigan State wins this game and pulls off the upset. So I'm 50-50 on that game right now, Jim.
Well, it's a great region where we have teams 1, 2, 3, and 5. Mm-hmm. But Duke, Michigan State, UConn, and St. John's, each with a great basketball history, some really great coaches there, long-standing coaches. That's just an interesting region. No matter who wins this round, the next round game is going to be a good matchup. The other three regions, well, let's go to the two where the number one seeds and the number two seeds still exist, and that's Arizona in the West, Michigan in the Midwest. Whenever you say this kind of thing, you get yourself in trouble, but they both look like they have a pretty good path, don't they?
They definitely do, and even when you take a look at the spreads, Michigan 9.5 over Alabama, over a good Alabama team. That's a big spread at this point in the tournament when it's you're not playing, you know, a 12 seed that happens to be there still. Arizona 7.5, a little bit more respect to Arkansas on that. I can't see either of them losing these games. I think they're both too good. I think they're two well-oiled machines. These could be games where at halftime, you know, they're down by four or it's a tie game. And then the second half, eventually the powerhouse can just wear you down. And I've been big on Alabama. I like their style of play until you get to a team like Michigan that can just shut you down. And I think that's what we're going to see happen.
Well, in those two matchups, I'm with you, Arizona and Michigan. And they're playing number four seeds. They're playing good teams in Arkansas and Alabama. But I'm in agreement with you, Arizona and Michigan. For each of those on the other side of Arizona, Purdue plays Texas. This is where I think, you know, Purdue has the advantage of a Cinderella, Texas, at an 11 seed. Purdue, a 6.5 point favorite. Iowa State, a number two seed against a number six seed, Tennessee. Iowa State, a 4.5 point favorite. Purdue and Iowa State, each number two seeds, which one has the better chance of advancing and beating that number one seed in their bracket?
That's a great question. I'm going back and forth. I think Iowa State, and this is probably less of a popular opinion, has a better chance to advance. Texas has looked not like an 11 seed. That's all I got to say. They do not look like a typical 11 seed. I don't think they beat Purdue, but I think they could give major problems to Purdue. And I think most importantly for Texas, right, I think they're a very confident team at this point. I mean, the win over Gonzaga was 74-68. It looked a whole lot more than that. Like, they were in command of that game. And I was very big on Gonzaga this year. So I was surprised to see that. And it would not shock me if Texas beat Purdue in this. And I remember, you know, before the tournament, we were both talking on, did Purdue peak by winning the Big Ten? Like, was that their best basketball? And winning the Big Ten means you are a good enough team to win this entire March Madness tournament. But I just wouldn't be surprised if there was a hiccup because of how well Texas is playing right now. So I'm more concerned about Purdue than I am Iowa State at this point.
Now, I don't know if this makes sense. I'm more concerned about Purdue against Texas than I am Iowa State versus Tennessee. However, if they both advance the way we expect, I give Purdue more of a chance to knock off Arizona than Iowa State versus Michigan. And we, as we talked about, you know, the couple weeks ago, did Purdue, you know, shoot their wad there with the Big Ten? Because I knew early in the season, Purdue was really good, looked the part, looked like they would be a number one seed type team. So it wasn't a surprise to me that they can play at that level. And, you know, I think that they have a real shot at it. I mean, they had to beat Michigan, so they already beat one of those top couple teams, where Michigan, Arizona, and Duke had really separated themselves from the rest of the country. Purdue has shown they could win against one of those teams. So I think Purdue, they've got a fighting chance if they could get past Texas.
I think so too. And to validate what you just said there, I was actually with a friend last night who went to Purdue, and he said, he's like, we worry about the double digit seeds here at Purdue. He said, if we beat Texas, we're winning the whole thing. It's not even a question. But he's like, but I don't know if we're going to beat Texas. So from somebody who went to Purdue as well, that's the same exact concern. Is they're more worried about Texas than they are about Arizona, Michigan, and the rest of the field.
Well, that's funny. And I got a feeling our buddy Dustin Schutte would probably say the same thing. So that leaves us with the South region, with Florida eliminated. Boy, again, I said my biased point of view is going to come out here. I have Houston going to the Final Four. I did not shed a tear for Florida losing early. Kind of makes their path a little bit more straightforward. They've got to be Illinois and then the winner of Iowa and Nebraska.
Yeah, and Illinois is a very good team, but I don't know that there's many people who really think like Illinois is going to be a Final Four team. I can't get there. I've really liked what I've seen from them, but I'm in agreement with you. I think Houston has the most straightforward path right now. They should beat Nebraska or Iowa, whoever wins that. So it's get past Illinois, who is going to throw everything at them. But I just think that defense is going to wear them down, and they'll advance and get to the Final Four just like we thought they would.
I'm with you on that. It's funny. Three out of the four teams there are Big Ten teams, with Illinois, Nebraska, and Iowa. But I think it's going to be Houston as the team that makes its way through there. I tell you what, again, this goes to something we talked about earlier. And, you know, are there enough Cinderella teams that made it through? I don't care. Don't care. At this point, they are 16 good teams that made it this far, Sean.
I completely agree with that. We're getting good basketball. We have an 11 seed. We have a 9 seed in this. A 1 seed's already out. Did we expect that half of the Sweet 16 was going to be double-digit seeds? Like that's not what normally happens either. So I think we're seeing competitive basketball, and that's all you can ask for at the end of the day.
I'm with you on that, and I can't see a matchup here that I don't want to watch.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's every game, it's a good matchup, but I got to say, I agree with you that Duke St. John's is probably my headliner also. That's going to be a fun one to watch.
And just like you said, competitive matchups. If Duke was playing Northern Iowa in this game, would we be excited about this?
No. That's exactly it. It's like I said, we want Cinderella in round one.
Yeah.
But when we get to Sweet 16, now we're looking for the blue bloods. And mostly we got them, you know, Duke, Michigan State, St. John's, Houston, Purdue, Michigan, Arizona. A lot of blue bloods, a lot of great games. And guess what? Next week, Sean, you and I are going to talk about it. Thank you so much, Sean. Thank all of you for tuning in. Make sure you come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.